COJ 230, this is the week 5 guide. You're supposed to have read Rules of Evidence, Illinois Rules of Evidence, 701, 702, and 703, and then the CSI Effect article that I linked to Blackboard. If you haven't done that, stop listening and go do that, and then come back. Assuming you have done this, and assuming you've read the assignment, you know that the requirements for this week are that you do two things. One, in your own words, I want you to distinguish opinion and expert testimony in Illinois. And then, find in brief a recent Illinois criminal case that discusses at length either opinion or expert testimony in an Illinois criminal case. Okay, so that's what I'm asking you to do for this week. Before you get to that assignment, read those three rules in the CSI Effect article, and then give me the summary, your own words, of what opinion testimony is compared to expert testimony for Illinois, and then find and present that Illinois criminal case that distinguishes or discusses one of those two. So to be clear, lay trial witnesses have to give answers that contain only the facts. And they're not supposed to, as a general rule, render opinions, because the function of the jury is to evaluate evidence and develop opinions and conclusions regarding factual matters. But as a practical matter, lay witnesses almost always offer some sort of opinion. Something as simple as what color the defendant's shirt appeared to be involves an opinion. How tall the defendant was involves an opinion. How far away the incident was from where they were standing involves an opinion. It's just a practical necessity, and it's something that, as it evolved and it occurs, it caused a need for the exceptions you saw in the rules that you read. So opinions, lay opinions, are recognized. A logical proposition, is that many times evidence that seems to contain facts actually contains opinions to a greater or lesser degree. The statement of a witness as to how far away, as I just stated, they were from the scene is going to be opinion. They probably didn't take out a measuring tape and say, I was 26.2 feet from the incident at the time that I witnessed it, right? Now, that may happen later, but that's probably going to happen by way of one of our crime scene techs or a detective or somebody with advanced knowledge, somebody who might be considered an expert by training and education, by knowledge that they have over and above what most people have, and they weren't occurrence witnesses. Lay people give opinions, or most witnesses give opinions, based on something they observed, something they witnessed. The thing that distinguishes these lay witnesses and their opinions from expert witnesses is that very fact that their opinions are based on direct observations, things relevant to the case that they're introducing that lead to or help bolster evidence. This is different from opinions of expert witnesses. Experts aren't at the scene, aren't witnessing things directly. Experts form their opinions based on their knowledge and experience in a particular thing and from facts that are gathered after the incident. The rules of evidence I ask you to review and the cases that you're going to work on this week will note that we treat expert witnesses different from lay witnesses, in part because expert witnesses offer opinions covering things from knowledge that nobody else has. an expert has to be shown. We have to lay the foundation, show they're competent in that field, right? To present them, as we have discussed, we have to do with any witness. And we do that by showing that they possess education, training, knowledge, skills, or practical experience that enable him or her to form and give their opinion testimony. Now again, you got to keep this straight. And I know it's new, but expert witnesses are not occurrence witnesses. They form their opinions based on information and evidence collected and provided by occurrence witnesses. Their ability to do so is set by a foundation required to be established by the party offering that individual as an expert prior to any time that they actually start to give their opinions to a jury. To contrast a little bit, a lay witness could, for example, testify that the vehicle in question appeared to be traveling at a speed greater than other vehicles on the roadway just prior to the accident. An expert, on the other hand, may be called to testify that based on tire marks, debris patterns, conditions of the vehicles, conditions of the roadway, the vehicle was traveling in excess of the speed limit. The expert has not seen or did not witness that vehicle traveling down the roadway. Now, you do this all the time. You're driving down the road and somebody goes flying by you. You don't know the speed that they're traveling. You can make a good guesstimate that they're traveling faster than you. And that may be true, but you don't know exactly what that speed was. The expert, on the other hand, after the incident, uses those things I just described and the science and math involved in that to come up with an opinion that's based on those calculations. Now, paralegal students, you're going to be looking for lay opinions from occurrence witnesses or to help lawyers find and retain expert witnesses in either criminal or civil cases. The CRJ and law enforcement students, you're going to be called on to give opinion or, in some cases, expert testimony in criminal or civil cases. Some of you will, for instance, go to accident reconstruction school, and you'll be the person who's used by the department on your shift to take off all the accidents, to take the reports on all the accidents, and you'll do those things I just described. Some of you may get additional training in other areas and become more knowledgeable, more experienced, and in fact, an expert in those areas. So, you know, having some exposure to the expectations of these things, the law and the roles, is going to be an advantage for all of you in your future experiences. The CSI Effect article that I'm asking you to read, that's a little bit out of date, and we don't talk about it that much anymore, but the main point is that, you know, we've noted this point, and we'll continue to note this point. Most cases are proven primarily by circumstantial evidence. Now, some of you have had criminal law. For those of you who had criminal law, I'm sure you've noted various scenarios as to how different elements of crimes are presented and tied together by circumstantial evidence. DNA is great. Science is great. It's wonderful when it applies, and especially if it brings a case to a close. But DNA doesn't apply or even exist in a majority of case scenarios. It's a finite type and group of cases that it's even applicable to. This article should help you realize the impact and burden that this kind of CSI effect has created for prosecutors, especially with juries. And it changed the vision and the expectation of people who don't know otherwise as to what beyond a reasonable doubt is. They think that everything has to be proven by DNA, by science, irrefutable. And that's just simply not the case. Most of our cases are going to be proven by circumstantial evidence, connecting the dots through people, witnesses, lay an expert, raising their right hands, sitting next to the judge on the witness stand and testifying, talking about their involvement in the case, their role in the case, what they observed, what they collected, and what they're presenting as evidence. This is another step as we keep building these blocks. Next week, we get into cross-examination, impeachment, and police officer testimony, I believe. So it's kind of another extension of our credibility of witnesses discussion. And, you know, for some of you, it's going to be something that you'll really want to pay attention to. Because, you're going to be doing these things, right? Stay well. We're past the four-week mark. We're heading quickly to the halfway point. It's going way too fast for me. But keep yourself safe. If you need me, you know where to find me.